Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. We're going to continue our discussion of the vascular system by hitting on some of the highlights of the systemic circulation. Please remember, as a big picture review, the systemic circulation includes blood vessels that carry red oxygenated blood from the left ventricle to the body, where we will, of course, have the exchange of nutrients and waste, the good old story of in with the good, out with the bad. Then we will return blue deoxygenated blood to the right atrium. Again, I'm just going to hit on some highlights. It would be very tedious and quite honestly boring if we went over every single vessel. So on this picture, a couple things. Number one, of course, we always start with the heart. We trace blood away from the heart in the direction of blood flow. We will eject the blood out of the left ventricle through the ascending aorta and into the aortic arch. The first major branch we hit off the aortic arch is the brachiocephalic trunk. I love that name. Brachio refers to the arm, cephalo refers to the head, and the brachiocephalic trunk does deliver blood to the upper extremity and to the head. The two branches of the brachiocephalic trunk include the right subclavian artery, which is headed towards the right upper extremity, and the right common carotid artery, which is headed towards the head. There's a couple of branches that quickly come off the right subclavian and likewise the left subclavian that we need to discuss. First, I want to mention the right internal thoracic artery, also called the internal mammary artery. It tells you where it is. It's internal and it's in the thoracic area in the mammary region. The importance of this artery is this is the vessel that is commonly used in coronary artery bypass grafting. It is the vessel of choice. Most typically, though, they use the left internal thoracic artery. What the surgeon will do, the surgeon will cut it loose from a point inside the thoracic cavity. Of course, you leave it attached at its origin from the subclavian artery. Then you swing that internal thoracic artery down past the blockage of whatever coronary artery is blocked, and therefore you supply blood to the cardiac muscle tissue that's beyond the blockage. If we follow the subclavian artery down, it goes under the clavicle, just like the name says. Then it enters the armpit. You know the name for the armpit is axillary. So there's the axillary artery. You know if you're asked to do an axillary temperature, hopefully you'll shove the thermometer in the right place, which would be in the armpit. We continue on down in the arm, and it's just a name change game. In the arm, we call it the brachial artery. And then down in the forearm, laterally over the radius, we call it now the radial artery. And then medially over the ulna, we call it the ulnar artery. So it's very easy knowing, again, the basic anatomy of bones and muscles. And it's pretty much a mirror image on the left side. The second major branch off the aortic arch is the left common carotid artery, and the third major branch off the aortic arch is the left subclavian artery, which basically follows the same branching away from the heart that we just did with the right subclavian artery. This is one of those pictures that's just for you. I love these real deal gross anatomy photos. I hope you're enjoying them too. I think it really makes it sink in well. This is an anterior view. We got the thoracic cavity opened up, the neck region opened up. We can see the aorta with the ascending aorta coming out of the heart, then the aortic arch. Please remember, three major branches in order off the arch are: number one, brachiocephalic artery, which is heading towards the upper extremity and the head. That's what the term brachiocephalic tells you. The brachiocephalic quickly branches into the right subclavian, which is headed under the clavicle to the right upper extremity, and the right common carotid, which is headed up towards the head. Second major branch off the aortic arch is the left common carotid artery going upwards to the head. Finally, third major branch off the aortic arch is the left subclavian artery. This is beautiful to see the left subclavian artery headed right under the clavicle, which we see cut here. So between the clavicle and the first rib, the subclavian artery is exactly where the name says it is. Furthermore, we see a little bit of branching here in the armpit. That, of course, would be the left axillary artery. Don't forget our internal thoracic or our internal mammary arteries. Here's one coming off the subclavian on the right side. It's the one on the left that you know is commonly used for coronary artery bypass grafting. This next drawing is absolutely key. If you do not understand the blood supply to the head and neck, you will not understand what's going on in your patients, and therefore you will not be able to help them. I know on initial inspection this looks busy, but with a little bit of studying, you can and you will be able to get it down. You must be able to. This is a right lateral view of the arterial supply of the head and neck. What we see here is a little bit of review. The brachiocephalic trunk, of course, you know, is the first major branch off the aortic arch. You know it divides into the right subclavian, which feeds the upper extremity, and we've already done that. But let's focus on what's headed up superiorly. Notice one of the first branches off the subclavian artery is called the vertebral artery. I know we're looking at the right side, but the left side's a mirror image. Let's follow the vertebral artery superiorly. It courses through all the transverse foramina of all seven cervical vertebrae. You remember that from bony anatomy. That's what those holes are for in the sides of the neck bones. The vertebral arteries are one of the key arteries that deliver blood to the back of the skull and the back of the brain. Let's look up here. Off the brachiocephalic trunk, we have another major branch coming off, the right common carotid artery. The right common carotid artery divides into the right external carotid artery, which mostly is going to things that are external, like your face. And I really won't focus too much more there. What I want to focus on is where the common carotid artery divides into the internal carotid artery. Because you guessed it, that's headed internally. And that is one of the major key suppliers of arterial blood to our brains that we must be familiar with. I want to use this next magnificent slide to bring it all together. This is the money shot as far as the brain is concerned. You must understand the arterial blood supply of the brain inside and out, backwards and forwards, if you want to have any hope at all of being able to understand what's happening in your patients and being able to help your patients who have cerebrovascular disorders, which are unfortunately extraordinarily common. Again, this is an inferior view of the base of the brain, so that this is anterior, this is posterior. What we're looking at here in general is something called the cerebral arterial circle. But nobody in the real world calls it that. Only your book does. When I'm out on the weekends with my friends drinking Pepsi, everybody in the real world, in the hospital, in neurology, calls this thing the circle of Willis. It's where the vertebral arteries and the internal carotid arteries that I just emphasized on the last slide come together and do their thing in supplying the brain with the blood and the oxygen and the glucose that it needs. Let's start posteriorly because it's a little bit easier. Let's begin with the vertebral arteries. Remember, there is a right and a left vertebral artery that come superiorly through the transverse foramina of the seven cervical vertebrae. They come together at a point here at the base of the brain and form another artery, conveniently for my pea brain, called the basilar artery. Yeah, the basilar artery is at the base of the brain. The next branches you need to know that supply the brain that come off the basilar artery are called the posterior cerebral arteries. There's one on the right and one on the left, shown here. And basically, they supply the back part of the brain, just like the name tells you. Now let's look at the internal carotids, because these are the Mac daddies. This really is most of the blood supply the brain. Let's check out the branches that you must know coming off the internal carotids. First, anteriorly, we have the anterior communicating artery, which does what it says it does. It crisscrosses back and forth and communicates between the front part of the brain. Then we have the anterior cerebral arteries, both a right and a left one, that supply the front part of the brain. The name tells you. Additionally, we have a right and a left middle cerebral artery, all again coming off the internal carotids, and they, as you might imagine, supply in general the middle parts of your brain. Last but not least, coming off that internal carotid artery is a very important connecting piece in the circle of Willis called the posterior communicating artery. I just put a red expanding box around it, and now I'm tracing over the right and left posterior communicating arteries. You put all that together, and there's your circle of Willis right in here, supplying with all of its branches coming off of that, your brain. What's the beauty of this? The beauty of this is we have a lot of what we call anastomoses. You must know what an anastomosis is. An anastomosis is where two or more blood vessels, like arteries, come together in the same region of the body. You could see there's lots of connections here. Those connections of these various arteries coming together are called anastomoses. Who cares? What's the point? The point is, if we have damage for whatever reason, trauma, surgery, thromboembolism, we might not be totally in terrible shape because we have an alternate route for the blood to flow through to our all-important brain tissue because we have these alternate connections called anastomoses. The name for this alternate route of circulation from the anastomosis is called collateral circulation. It's great to have collateral circulation to important parts of our body, like the brain, and the same thing happens in the heart. I can't emphasize enough the beauty of this. Without these anastomoses supplying the alternate circulation called collateral circulation, many more of us and our patients and our loved ones would have brain damage and heart damage. So thank goodness for anastomoses and collateral circulation. On this next drawing of the thorax, I'm not going to bore you with the details. I'm just going to hit on the highlights because using your basic knowledge of muscles and of bones and the flow chart you have, you can easily trace these arteries. I just want to hit on a couple of highlights. Number one, please know that the name of the aorta in the thorax is called the thoracic aorta. You may see some aneurysms of that piece, which can be deadly. The name of the aorta below the diaphragm in the abdominal cavity is called the abdominal aorta. You may see patients with abdominal aortic aneurysms, and they can be deadly as well. The first major branch off the abdominal aorta is called the celiac trunk, and you must know that, and you must know the branches that emerge from that. Let's take a look at them on the next slide. Here is a view of the abdominopelvic cavity. I want to take a look specifically where the aorta pierces the diaphragm and changes names from the thoracic to the abdominal aorta. First major branch off is called the celiac trunk. And then we always like to ask you in lab and sometimes in lecture as well, what are the three major branches that come off the celiac trunk? And they are the hepatic artery going to the liver, the gastric artery going to the stomach, and the splenic artery going to the spleen. So just remember that three-way there because we like to hit on it. Hepatic, gastric, splenic are the three branches you must know off the celiac trunk. The next major branch off the abdominal aorta that I will touch on is the superior mesenteric artery. This is a ginormous pipe with huge importance. This is a big blood supplier of arterial blood to our intestines, so please be familiar with it. The rest of these I'm going to leave to you for homework. You can handle it. I don't want to bore you. This next picture is just for you. Again, I love these gross anatomy photographs. It's the real deal. So something for you to check out. It might help you in your studies, but there's nothing new here. I just love to look at them. Here we have the abdominopelvic cavity wide open. Here's our nice dome-shaped muscular diaphragm. We can see the abdominal aorta with its branches that you're studying, and also the inferior vena cava with its branches that you're studying as well. So just a wonderful gross anatomy photograph to marvel at and to prove what you're studying is real and useful. High mag view of the celiac trunk. Again, they like to quiz you on it in detail in the laboratory, and of course you must know it in general. So we have a high mag anterior view showing the abdominal aorta as it has just pierced the diaphragm. First major branch off is of course a celiac trunk. Then you got to know the three-way: hepatic to the liver, gastric to the stomach, and splenic to the spleen. Never forget it. Let's again just hit the key items on this slide because we don't want to get tedious with the details. Please notice the abdominal aorta. When it comes to an end, it reaches an upside down V-like structure and divides into the right and left common iliac arteries. If we follow the one on the right in this anterior view, it divides into a right internal iliac artery and an external iliac artery. And they really tell you where they're going. The internal iliacs, I want you to know, in general are supplying things that are internal, like the pelvic organs. The external iliac mostly goes to the lower limbs. We also have on this same slide a posterior view of the right lower extremity. And again, I think these views are useful to give you that 3D perspective that will really bring it all home and help you understand and remember this long term. Let's go ahead and switch gears and check out the venous system. And the good news is, once again, based on your knowledge of muscle bones and now your knowledge of arteries, pretty much you should be able to name everything because a lot of it just matches up. Now, there are exceptions, and those are the things I'll try to hit on. One of the things I'll always remember is the mnemonic in med school they taught me, which is VANL, V-A-N-L, because veins, arteries, nerves, and lymphatics in the human body almost always go together, almost always in the same place with the same name. And that always reminds me of a true story that shows the usefulness of that mnemonic. I was a third-year med student, and I was doing a vascular surgery rotation. And I was up all night for a month, literally. And I was about to be grilled on rounds by the attending physician, and the chief resident knew I was going to get hammered. And he told me, look, just remember your mnemonic VANL, and that'll get you out of almost any situation. So about 5 o'clock in the morning, the attending physician's on rounds, and all the other residents and med students and fellows are there. And he says to me, "Hey, Dr. Gonshore," and I wasn't even a doctor yet. I was just a lowly med student with my short white coat. He said, "Can you please tell the group where the left pudendal vein is?" And I said, "Sure, it's right next to the left pudendal artery." Now look, that was really not the answer he was looking for. He wanted to know it was in the groin region, but I didn't remember. So I gave him kind of a smart aleck answer, but I was at least partially right. But let that mnemonic help you. And now I'm going to prove to you just how easy it is. Let's go ahead and merge venous blood towards the heart. Here are the radial veins right over the radius and the ulnar veins over the ulna. Just like the arteries, we're going to merge that venous blood into a vein over the arm, conveniently called the brachial vein. We're going to merge that blood into the armpit, into a vein conveniently called the axillary vein, and then continue to merge that blood towards the heart in this big vein under the clavicle, which you know is called the subclavian vein. So that was so far just like the arteries. Then we have a little bit of a difference. Let's go over the differences. Let me start down here. We have a vein that you must know called the cephalic vein. The cephalic vein basically is on the front side of the arm. I just remember cephalic side. The cephalic's on the side of the arm, and it merges its blood into the subclavian. So that's my mnemonic. I just let the sound of the word help me. Cephalic is on the front side of the arm, and the cephalic merges its blood into the subclavian. We also have some new players down here, some names we didn't do when we did arteries. First, we have the median cubital vein. Median means in the middle. Cubital refers to the area in front of the elbow. This is the vein that you will often target when you go to draw blood, or if you've ever had blood drawn. You must know this median cubital vein. The median cubital vein merges its blood into the basilic vein. The basilic vein is on the front side of the arm, but it's on the medial side. It's on the side towards the body, and that's how I remember it. The basilic vein is on the side of the arm towards the body, and the basilic vein merges its blood into the brachial vein. I kind of put it all together by remembering both the basilic and the median cubital vein eventually merge their blood into the brachial vein. So we have to put a little bit of BM, you get it? I mean basilic and median cubital into the brachial. So put some BM into the brachial, and that will help you remember that both the basilic vein and the median cubital vein merge their blood into the brachial vein. Up top here, we also have something different than the arterial system that really is key. Notice as we're winding that subclavian vein towards the heart, we have other blood merging into it from above, specifically the external jugular vein, and more importantly, the internal jugular vein merge their blood into the subclavian vein. You must know that the internal jugular vein is the vein that drains the majority of venous blood from the head and from the neck, including, of course, the brain with triple stars. Notice where the internal jugular and subclavian veins come together. That forms a new vein. It's called the brachiocephalic vein. Let the name help you. Brachio means arm, cephalic means head. The brachiocephalic vein drains blood from the upper extremity and from the head, just like the name tells you. Then we merge the both the right and the left brachiocephalic veins together, and where they come to a point, they point to a new vein. It's the superior vena cava. Vena means vein, cava means cavernous, that's big, and superior means it's coming from superior. The superior vena cava takes all that venous blood, basically from the entire body above the diaphragm, and dumps it into the right atrium. One thing that's cool to notice, both here and especially on the CAT when you're trying to figure things out, in general, wherever two major veins come together, they come together in a V-shape, pointy-like deal. And wherever those two veins come together at a point, it points to a new vein with a new name. Just like we merged internal jugular with subclavian, at that point, it became a new vein called the brachiocephalic. Likewise, we took the right and left brachiocephalics, we merged them together at a point like the point of a V or a point of an arrow, and it's pointing towards a new vein with a new name. In this case, the superior vena cava. That really helps me when I'm tracing and identifying the veins, both here, but especially in lab on the specimens that you're studying. Just calm down and relax on this slide. There's nothing new here. It's just the real deal. I love showing you and I love looking at the gross anatomy. So here we have a nice view of that juicy median cubital vein, the one you're going to hit on when maybe you're drawing blood or putting in an IV. Then there's also the basilic vein that we talked about. And please remember that both the basilic and the median cubital merge their blood into the brachial. So put a little BM into the brachial vein and you'll never miss that. Now we got the lower extremities. We got an anterior view of the right lower and a posterior view of the right lower. It really helps you get oriented and helps you get that 3D thing going on. I'm not going to go over all the tedious details. Again, using your bone and muscle and arterial anatomy that you already know, you can name most of the things. Let me hit on the highlights. Number one, I want you to pay attention to the great saphenous vein. The great saphenous vein, you should know, is the longest vein in the human body. The longest vein, not the largest, but the longest. It goes all the way from the top part of the foot all the way up into the groin region where it joins into the femoral vein. It's also the vein that you should know from my course is frequently harvested to perform coronary artery bypass surgery. You know, if someone has multiple blockages, you can only use that internal thoracic artery one time, but you can cut multiple pieces of the saphenous vein out and use it to graft and bypass multiple blockages in the heart. That again is the beauty of having anastomoses and collateral circulation down here. If you hack out a piece of the great saphenous vein, you're not going to miss it because the other vessels, that alternate circulation we talk about, is going to take over and you're going to be just fine. That's why you'll also notice in a lot of your cardiac bypass patients, you'll notice a scar down here on their leg. That's because that's where the surgeon harvested pieces of the great saphenous vein. Another thing to look at here and to reemphasize, please remember our common iliacs coming off the bottom of the inferior vena cava in that upside down V-like pattern similar to the aorta. Then the common iliacs branch into internal and external. What I want you to remember is internal iliacs go to the pelvic organs. And that makes sense because the pelvic organs are internal. External iliacs are mostly going to the lower limbs. This, again, is a gorgeous drawing from your textbook. I really love this. I'm just going to hit on the highlights because most of these you can figure out from what we've already done and talked about. What I do want to mention is something you should never forget. The superior vena cava essentially drains everything from the thorax and above. That's everything above the diaphragm. All that blue venous blood is eventually getting into that superior vena cava and entering that right atrium from above. Likewise, you better know about the inferior vena cava. Number one, it is the largest vein in the human body, not the longest. The longest is the great saphenous. The largest, meaning the biggest, largest, holding the mega monster volume of venous blood, is the inferior vena cava. And what does it drain? It drains the abdomen and below. In other words, all the blue venous blood from below the diaphragm, is eventually getting into that inferior vena cava and heading into the right atrium from below. I put a little question down here for you to make things a little bit clinical. What about pregnancy? During pregnancy, it's not unusual for pressure of the baby inside the womb to partially collapse that inferior vena cava and cause circulation problems and swelling and puffiness in the legs. That's why the doctor will often ask the woman to alternate or rotate positions, maybe to lay on that left side instead of on the right side, for example, so we can get a little pressure off that inferior vena cava and decrease some of the swelling and discomfort. Couple of new players that we didn't see in the arterial system I must mention. You should be familiar with a vein called the azygous vein. The azygous vein is this vein located just to the right of the midline. On the kitty cat and on this specimen here, you could see it hugs the right side of the back thoracic cavity wall right against the vertebral column. And it drains the blood basically from the right side of the thoracic cavity into the superior vena cava. On the opposite side, the left side, there's something called the hemiazygous vein. I'll trace on it right now. There's an arrow on it as well. It's located just to the left of the midline, and it basically drains a lot of the venous blood from the left side of the thoracic cavity. It merges its blood into the azygous vein, which you know is headed into the superior vena cava and eventually into the right atrium. Nothing new on this slide. I just wanted to wow you with more gross anatomy. This is a cadaver that's kind of been filleted wide open. You're looking deep inside that thoracic cavity from an anterior view. Here is the vertebral column. Here is showing you the hemiazygous vein just to the left of the midline, merging its blood into the azygous vein, which is just to the right of the midline. They come together and merge their blood into the superior vena cava. So a gorgeous gross anatomy view of the real deal for you to marvel at and enjoy. And I can't think of a better shot than this to end our discussions of the systemic circulation.